Bienvenidos and welcome to the Jacobin Sports Show. I'm Matthew Miranda, joined, as always, by a man that Kanye West has not accused of sleeping with his wife. Remember, they're not together, so you might be legally binding yourself to whoever Kanye's next or current unknown wife is. So just, you want to be clear, Jonah, do you mean... And I always thought you were more of a Chloe girl than a Kim. I thought that was more yours.
I'm non discriminatory. Anyway, the point is, I have not been tweeted by Kanye West.
You are having a better day today, I'm sure, than Chris Paul is having. Yeah. So today's episode, we want to talk some World Cup stuff. Some LeBron James as spokesperson stuff and the irony of Mr. I won't just shut up and dribble behavior recently. Maybe a little NBA talk, and that will be it for this episode. Have not spoken to the people in a while. So I kind of want to get into a few things here, John. And I want to start just quickly from you, a non-sport story, but one that's significant and there's connections to be made between everything. The news of the railroad strikers being deprived of the right, essentially to be respected as labor and to have their wishes recognized. I mean, is there any alternative at this point? Like, I don't know how the law exactly works. I know it looks like they're being stuck with one day, one pay day off a year now, which is absurd. Is there any recourse for these people, or is this what the system says is what goes?
I mean, there are people far better placed to talk about it, this than me. I mean, they could do an illegal wildcat strike. In other words, an illegal unauthorized strike. I don't think that's going to happen. My understanding is that, the pay in this industry is quite good, but that the business model of the railroads means keeping workforces to a minimum, the size of the workforce, right? So you have very kind of small margins in terms of your workforce size, and so there's a lot of compulsion to maximize the use of your existing workforce. So they really, there was a real boundary set around the paid leave issue. And then, this is something that the federal government has control over, right? Because it's such a strategic industry. And so, yeah, I don't think there's a recourse now. I mean, look, there are people who are just like way bigger experts on this than I am. What a shitty outcome, though.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's just blatantly gross. And, it has echoes of the Reagan was it the air traffic controllers that he?
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's different. I mean, he really was trying to crush the union, right? Yeah. And in the context of massive unemployment at the beginning of the 1980s, when labor was on the defensive, and it was an attempt to really dismantle existing labor unions. This is a shitty deal imposed with the support of union leaderships, but against, right, what had been the vote of the membership. So it's a very different dynamic than that. I mean, Biden is not Reagan, whatever his limitations. And this is not the early 1980s. If anything, labor is sort of on the offensive. But it did put the left in a very bad position, in a real bind, right? And the people in Congress who voted to impose the tentative agreement with the understanding there would be the separate resolution on paid sick time, which did not pass, right? Which failed in the Senate, which everyone, it seems to me that was a mistake, even if union leaders, that was supposedly what they wanted, right? Was that combination. So it seems like a mistake to me.
It does. And I was struck, there's no obvious connection here at all, but I was just struck this week by the juxtaposition to me between you know, the railroad workers who do this essential labor, you know, being asking for just basic, you know, basic human treatment and having it denied. Total out of left field connection here, but I was reading a writer at The Athletic named Chloe Morgan. Yeah, Chloe Morgan wrote a piece this week about how English LGBTQ fans especially feel really, really damaged and let down by their national team not wearing the One Love rainbow armband at the World Cup, which again is another example of a community that like is not asking for, you know, anything extraordinary, just a kind of basic acknowledgement of their humanity. And like the teams won't wear it because they don't want a yellow card. And when you see the nonsense, like that teams, like how easily a team will give up a yellow card for something else, but not for this opportunity. I don't know. There's no obvious, it's not like there's a relationship between the two, except there's something there that just disillusions me on both sides. But that's just me. Speaking of the World Cup, have you been watching? What have you been feeling? Who are you rooting? Let me ask you this. I want to get the quick Jonah Birch moral imperative on who to root for in each of the remaining games. I'm gonna take my direction from your moral compass.
That's so good. I'm gonna mislead you right here.
So right now, at the half, South Korea and Portugal are tied. Yep. Whose people deserve to win that game, Jonah Birch?
That's an impossible. This is an impossible question to answer. You know, on the Portuguese side, you have the centuries of colonialism, but then the beauty of the 1974, the April Revolution in Portugal, the revolution of the carnations. You know, plus a great food country. Mm-hmm. Very pretty country. Then on the South Korean side, you have a country that is invented, you know, by the United States and local, essentially, what had been pro-Japanese officials after World War II in the context of the Cold War and established a terrible dictatorship. But then just beautiful, beautiful social struggles, the struggle to establish democracy finally. You know, 1986 and a series of movements before then, huge strikes in the 1990s. That's an impossible question to answer, South Korea or Portugal. Now, my hot take on the World Cup is that the one true moral team to root for is France. You got to root for France. And I'll tell you why. France, yeah.
Tell me why.
When the French national team won the World Cup in 1998, you know who was the most upset? Jean-Marie Le Pen, the French far-right leader, right? Because it was this, you know, he said, French, look at them, they're all black, you know. Nothing would be, I mean, it's a bit more complicated now, but really it's a blow to the far right whenever the French national team wins a tournament. So I say, you got to root for France in the remainder of the World Cup. I'm the only person on the U.S. left who thinks that, but that is my position. It's as a stand against the racism of the far right, French national.
This
team.
Is what I'm looking for. This is what I'm looking for. I like this.
Yeah.
I'm struggling today. The game that I was watching, Uruguay, is up 2-0 at the half over Ghana because of the Suarez handball still. Like, I root for Ghana. I root for them to get that revenge. I hope they find it, but it doesn't look good right now at the half. Looking at other games today, there's two more today. Serbia and Switzerland. My instinct is that anyone who plays Switzerland is the morally superior team. That just seems like a given.
Absolutely.
But what about Brazil and Cameroon?
Oh, you gotta go with Cameroon. Everyone on the Brazilian team is a evangelical Bolsonaro supporter, except for Richarlison. They all universally, without exception.
Well, no. Remember, Richarlison.
Yeah, Richarlison.
A very beautiful
Richarlison,
statement.
Richarlison. Yeah, yeah. I can't remember because he played for Everton, but right. You know, now he no longer now he plays for Tottenham. But
Right.
Everyone else is comes from the far right, essentially. I mean, there's some, maybe Anthony is a Lula supporter, but it's not clear. But Richarlison is the only public one. Anything that is bad for Neymar is good for the world, I say. So, you know, you got to root.
That's our episode title right there. Anything that is bad for Neymar is good for the world.
Truly. I truly believe that. Oh, I love
that. Yeah. Okay. Couple more round of 16 matchups. For me, anyone who plays Spain is my adopted mother country for the day. So Morocco, I'm rooting so hard for. Now, I'm biased on this. I know Spanish history is very complicated, particularly with the left. But as a Puerto Rican, I can't root for Spain to have success like in anything. So I'm going for Morocco.
Nice. Yeah, that's the Spain colonized Morocco, part of Morocco, for a very long period of time. So
there we are all Moroccan tomorrow. What about Croatia and Japan? I feel like it's Croatia. It's got to be Croatia, right?
I'm going to say something that could get us in trouble, but
this is what we're here for today. This is why we're here.
If thinking purely in terms of World War II history, which I do, there's no one on the side of the Angels in that one. I mean, there were some Croats who joined the resistance, but there was a whole lot of Ustashi, you know. And the Croatian ultranationalist Nazi collaborators. And then what the Japanese did in Korea and China and Vietnam and the Philippines, you just can't. I'll never get over it. So, you know, that history feels much realer to me than it does to, you know, Kanye West, what happened 80 years ago. So I'm a neutral in that one. I'm against everyone involved. Yeah.
Two bits of information that I forgot to include, random World Cup bits. We talked before about South Korea. Did you know South Korea, one of only two nations at this World Cup whose predominant religion is atheism? Any guesses on the other?
Wow.
I would never have guessed the other. I would never have guessed the other one, but it makes sense.
One of only two nations whose predominant religions are atheism. Oh my god.
Ironic that you would say that.
Ironically? Really? Well, is it?
I said, no, ironic that you would say, oh my god, while you're trying to figure out who's the atheist.
I thought then you were going to say, like, oh, it's actually Saudi Arabia.
It's a very recent poll.
Yeah. Is it Denmark? No.
It is Denmark.
Ah, okay.
Well done, sir. It is Denmark, yeah. I was hoping those two would meet and go to penalty kicks just so I could see, like, are they any more relaxed than everybody else, or is this harder for them not having a god to pray to? But it didn't happen. So we'll have to wait for the next World Cup. France and Poland, you've already answered, obviously. France. England, Senegal. I don't know a ton of Senegalese history. I'm going to guess Senegal, though, is the obvious choice.
Definitely.
Your boys, Argentina, take on the continent of Australia.
Wow.
Who's the better group there?
Let me tell you something. You know, it's funny. People really hate on the Argentines. Like, I feel like on the Latin American left, it's somehow okay to be like, oh, the Argentines. Meanwhile, they're all wearing Che Guevara shirts and listening to Mercedes Sosa. And it's like, oh, you mean the country that suffered like this brutal dictatorship that killed way more people almost certainly than died under Pinochet in Chile, much bigger country, obviously. And and it has a massive left and great food. You hate Argentina. Everyone hates the Argentines. Why? Because you met some asshole in Miami once? I say no. I'm pro-Argentina and pro-Uruguay, you know.
Argentina has been my team for many years.
You like the winners. I gotta say. I mean, except for the Knicks.
What?
But other than that, when it comes to football, you know.
Maybe in soccer, it's a bit different. Because I've done my time with the Mets and the Knicks and the Jets back in the day. So I deserve whatever joy I can get out of this. Obviously, the last one, Jonah, the United States, against the Netherlands. I'm going to ask you a different question on this one because I feel like the answer of who to root for is obvious.
Wait,
do you prefer to call it? What's that?
What's the answer?
It's got to be. It has to be Holland.
Oh, I don't think I can ever root for the Dutch. But
first of all, do you prefer Holland or the Netherlands? It's Netherlands, right?
Yeah, I mean, isn't Holland originally one of the provinces in the Greater Netherlands or something? Anyway, like
I think I just love the name. That, like, when you're called the Netherlands, like there's some intrigue there.
Yeah,
there's something cool there. But are you gonna? Are you? Is there an argument to be made for rooting for the U.S. over the Dutch?
Sure.
I don't like. I got to tell you, and this might get us in trouble too. Just as a general like vibe. Never been crazy about the Dutch as a soccer team.
No. I mean, they have some players that I like. Big Virg, obviously. Virgil van Dijk. Been as great, you know, recently as he was a couple years ago. But still a great player. They had, before, the golden generation of you know, Wesley Sneijder and Robin and Van Persie. And they're a bit more of an underdog now. Now, the Dutch role in Europe is just terrible. They just play a terrible role in Europe in the neoliberal, you know, conquest of Europe and governance. And I can't forgive them, you know, for their role. Also, talk about a country with a racism problem. You know, who are we?
Yeah.
Far be it, you know, for us. But I gotta say, you know, I mean, the Dutch far right is nasty and has quite a bit of influence, and just in general. So I mean, you know, the people who gave us the Afrikaners, right? You know, now the U.S. team is more likable in the past, except for Pulisic, and I just can't ever root for the U.S. because of Christian Pulisic. It's not just that he plays for Chelsea. If I hear one more reference to fucking Captain America, I'm going to shoot myself, you know, and possibly. It's unbearable. Between Pulisic
I'm glad you brought that point up because I want to say something about that because that killed me specifically. It's not only it's such a derivative cornball, like literally. Derek Jeter has been Captain America. David Wright has been Captain America. Landon Donovan has been Captain. Any American who does anything in an international anything becomes Captain America. It's weak. I thought of you when Pulisic scored the goal but got hurt. I was like, Jonah Birch might be the happiest man alive right now because Pulisic looks like he's done. Like, the U.S. got the goal. And they are, like, I will agree with you. I have generally found American soccer, maybe because they're always underdogs, to be pretty likable. So if they could win and he could be out, like, you really could have it all for once. But unfortunately, Captain America bounced back, and it sounds like we'll be playing against the Dutch tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's too bad. I mean, I'm sure that'll help the U.S. It's funny because it's obvious U.S. soccer is improving. And I don't just mean compared to 4 years ago when they didn't make the World Cup. I mean, even in the past when they've had successful teams, they've never had this level of creativity, right? They have some genuine creators, like world-class players. And Dest was great in that last game against Iran. I mean, they really dominated in the first half, particularly up the right side. And they need a striker. They need a changeover in their defense for people who are, you know, for central defenders who are better playmakers, right? Better passers and can do more. But the team has gotten more talented. Now, if only the commentators could keep up and we could get a new generation. And even worse than Christian Pulisic is Alexi Lalas. Alexi Lalas, I've decided.
Thank you.
There is no more unbearable voice in all of television. All of the whole sports world, I cannot take him anymore.
He has nothing to say. So here's what's funny. Lawless has spent much of the tournament in the studio with Clint Dempsey. And Clint Dempsey is a clear example. Like, to me, it's an obvious example of, like, Clint Dempsey was an incredible athlete. Like, as American goal scorers go, he's got to be, like, number one. But he's not there because he has anything to say. And he doesn't hide it. Clint Dempsey seems very hopelessly himself. He is not a public speaker. He is not an analyst. He is there because he was good a long time ago, and Americans know his name. Alexi Lawless is there because literally 30 years ago, he had a goatee and kind of long hair, and that was enough to, like, grant him this most favored nation status in American soccer commentary. He says he doesn't say anything of any substance. He's constantly making stupid jokes. Then, and the I thankfully, I have Fubo, so where I live, I can't get... I have Telemundo on my Fubo, so I can watch the games in Spanish. And thank God for that, because the other day, if you watch the games that don't involve the American team, Fox spends half the game trying to allude to the American game in some way. Then, when the U.S. was actually playing... And I know, like, you shouldn't expect more from Fox Sports or Fox in general, but there's no recognition on the part of the announcer that it's 2022 and that it's very possible not everyone listening to your broadcast is a flag-waving, like, barbecuing American. He was such a homer in the Iran game. When they kept talking about the Pulisic collision with the Iranian goaltender, did they mention the fact that the Iranian goaltender has a name? The goalkeeper never got a name. Literally at the end of the game when the U.S. was pushing for another goal, the announcer yelled, like, run the daylight, kid. Like, he was totally, totally hamming it up. And so I don't dislike American soccer, the team, at all, but I need an advancement of about 20 years in terms of, like, how it's covered. And just the recognition that, like, this is not a monolithic country. And not everybody watching the game has the same... I can't think of another sport on a global level where you would have the play-by-play announcer being such a homer for one team.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Speaking of annoying, LeBron James this week, Jonah Birch, making the news. LeBron James asked the assembled reporters after a recent Laker game why they have not brought the same energy asking him about Jerry Jones and the recent photo of Jerry Jones, I think in high school, was at a... there were black students being integrated into the school, and there's a photo of a bunch of white students, a crowd of them, that the black students are having to walk through to get to the school, and Jerry Jones is one of the students. It is not an inviting photo. You can imagine, like, basically what the vibe there is. And LeBron wants to know why he is not being asked about this the way that he was asked about the Kyrie situation. So there's the obvious, like, well, you don't play in the NFL. When something happens with the Dallas Cowboys, LeBron James is never the first person I want to hear from. Like, you have nothing to do with this. But it reminded me a little bit, we may have spoken about this once. Tell me if I'm taking this too far, because I want to be careful about not falling into certain traps and biases here. But Rasheed Wallace years ago made a point when the NBA was drafting high school players directly to the pros that it would have a negative effect on the players' union in terms of bargaining, because their union base would collectively be less educated than it had been before. And this is not to suggest that, like, you have to go to college to be smart or to be learned. Like, you don't, obviously. But there's such, like, there's a staggering delusionalism to LeBron where this man is literally walking around thinking because he is so good at basketball, we should be asking him about football. And in light of what's happening with Elon Musk right now, and I just, in terms of you're witnessing the real world application of somebody who is so untouchable in their field that they can reach into others and presume that they have any business there. I find this LeBron thing, especially for a guy who was not vocal about the Kyrie story really at all, and has still been to me very disappointing about everything he seems to say about it, is about Kyrie and how Kyrie should be able to play and Kyrie shouldn't have to go through all these steps, not about what Kyrie was actually hawking. I don't know if I have an endgame for this little rant, but it's just very disappointing.
It seems to me that in modern American politics, accusations of hypocrisy, that whoever is criticizing you is a hypocrite, and it's just that is the currency. I mean, it's Trump's classic maneuver, mm-hmm. right? You do it too, but I'm honest about it. Or we're not talking about you doing X, right? I mean, it's a way of trying to change the conversation when you don't know what to say about something. I think that as a member of the NBA Players Association, there's an argument to be made about Kyrie and, you know, that if I was a fellow player and Kyrie's right mm-hmm. to play basketball, and is this the right way of handling it, that are legitimate. And I also think it's true. It's absurd that Jerry Jones could get away. You know, no one has anything to say about that, but it obviously is a deflection, and it's a deflection from the stupidest conversation, you know, started by the biggest fucking morons in the universe. Like, I don't know. I don't know. You know, it's like Kyrie follows Kanye down this road where Kanye is now defending Hitler.
Even Hitler, he says.
Again.
I'm sorry. Especially Hitler, he said.
What is there to say about this at this point? Except it's just... this is, again, and we don't have to go over it again, but the only thing to say about this is you've been taken in by the oldest trick in the book because you're stupid. Because you're, you know, like, you think that you are, you know, that everyone else is a sucker and only you see the truth. And then you go down this conspiracy theory rabbit hole and you end up at, you know, 100-year-old forgeries, you know, like you end up at, you know, the protocols of the elders of Zion and Henry Ford, and it's the Jews who are really at fault for all your problems, and that's the side you come out. I mean, how dumb are you, really? And you know, no bans are going to help this. No denunciations, but someone has to say you're. It's just the oldest, you're the biggest sucker, right? Like you are such a schmuck just taken in by the oldest book.
Yeah. And it's especially concerning to me because you're seeing, like, this is extremely, this is right now but the semester for my kids is ending. It's like the last 3 days of the semester and they're all writing analysis papers. They're first semester freshmen, most of them. And their struggle is, like, pretty universal. Like, it's, you know, they're doing analogies and comparisons and analyses, but sometimes the foundation of their comparison is not a good one. They're making the kind of rhetorical mistakes that people make when they're trying to get into the practice. But Kyrie and LeBron, even more so, having... It's not like this is different. It's not like we're in this new age where athletes are being asked to comment on things that they really have nothing to do with. But the platform that they have is so significant. And the inability or the lack of desire or curiosity to recognize that, like, people who go to school or people who not even go to school, but people who study things for years are not, you know, they're not a joke. Like, you can learn from other people. I know that this sounds like a cry in the wind, and it's you know, it doesn't matter, or like, but I think it does. I don't have all the words for it yet, but there's something to me extremely specifically concerning about this story about LeBron James. Honestly, first thinking as his premise that Jerry Jones versus Kyrie Irving works as some sort of comparison. It's the ultimate logical, like, it's the ultimate limit of perspective to think that because two things have anything in common, they are therefore the same. And therefore you can make a comp off it. I something about this I find more, this doesn't roll off like the usual, like, oh, you know, here's an athlete being kind of silly. Something about this to me is, I'll have to write about this maybe for the Patreon. Something about this seems like a bigger deal to me than it's going to come as. I don't know. Let's close on a brighter note, Jonah Birch, which is the NBA standings, where if I look at them and I crane my neck all the way to the top, at 18-4, the Boston Celtics, where is the Joe Mazzulla contract extension? When is that coming? Al Horford, two more, you tell me, is Al Horford still that good that he's getting a two-year extension, guaranteed money, because you got to have Al Horford around for two more years?
I mean, this was going to happen at some point. It was definitely going to happen. He's not going anywhere. They want to re-sign him. He does so much for them still. You know, money is really good for the Celtics.
It is. Yeah, it's not a big deal at all.
Under $20 million. Mm-hmm. He does so many different things. He's so versatile. He's so good defensively still. He's so good at switching. And then he's never shot better from the three. You know, he helps their spacing so much. Like, he's just perfect for what they want to do. And when he retires, I bet he'll, you know, I don't know what he'll do but he could definitely work for the organization. I mean, they love him, really love him in Boston.
If the Celtics win a title in the next year or two with him playing the role that he has, would Al Horford have his number retired?
Yes.
In Boston?
I think so.
Wow. Okay. He's been that good, huh?
Yeah. And for a team that, as a whole, if you look at the time since he's been there, has overall been very consistent and very good, although, you know, hasn't obviously gotten over the top. But I do think they'll retire his number. I mean, at some point they're going to run out of numbers, you know. I mean, the players on this team who could have their number retired, theoretically, just like realistically right now, start with Al Horford and then Tatum and Brown and Marcus Smart. If he sticks around for a while and they win the title, that's entirely possible. They're literally going to run out of numbers at some point. Maybe Blake Griffin's 91 will, you know. who knows?
Any chance we'll see Luke Kornet's name?
Tell you what,
lost it to the rafter.
At the beginning, so he's another one who Brad Stevens clearly really likes. He likes bigs who can
pass. I've always liked Luke Kornet.
What?
I've always loved, even when he was on the Knicks, he's very easy to root for. He has limitations, and he always stands out to me because his mom is very sweet, and his mom would literally, like, I would write a recap about, like, Luke, that somehow mentioned one thing about Luke Kornet. And his mom on Twitter will be, like, very vocal and, like, happy and sharing it. So I've always had a soft spot for Luke Kornet. And I'm glad to see that he seems to have a bit of a role there. And he can play a bit of a role if you let him.
Yeah. I mean, until Rob gets back in particular, you know, he passes
How long is he still out for, do you know?
Well, he just scrimmaged for the first time this week. So,
really? Okay.
I mean, they're not going to rush him back, but I he's going to come back at some point. They have been so good without him. It's interesting to see what they'll be with him. The nicknames for Luke Kornet, the Green Kornet. Get it?
I like that. That's good.
The Unicornet. The unicorn.
Yes.
I know there are some other ones that I'm forgetting, but he's really good with the, you know. Anyway, you can do a lot with that. They've been really good, and it's clearly them and the Bucks in the East that are, you know, headed for a real showdown, right? You know. Not that other
teams. Do you have any concerns about the slightly resurgent 76ers?
Absolutely not. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? I love this.
Dancing on their grave before they've even been buried.
What is it about this Sixers team that people just can't? They're them and the Nets. It's like people can't quit them. What evidence is there at all that they are going to be a seriously competitive team in the NBA playoffs?
They've won 7 of 10.
They have not. Oh my God. You know, let me take off my green colored glasses and speak with an objective voice of truth here.
Go ahead.
So they made the finals with Allen Iverson, obviously, in a decimated East, and then just got trounced by the Lakers. They won that game one because Iverson went off, right? Otherwise, got completely trounced. And a team that was solid but not a great team. Otherwise, they have been a consistently underachieving team since the early 1980s. Since the beginning of the first Reagan administration was the last time the Sixers seriously competed for a title. This team has all kinds of problems still. I don't get of course, Joel Embiid is a great player. He's a great player. Truly great, you know? Otherwise, that is a very flawed, an obviously flawed roster. And the way that people just ignore the it seems like a mistake to me. You know, I would be more afraid of the Miami Heat than of the Philadelphia 76ers.
That's fair. I get that. That's fair. Let me ask you this. Take the Heat, the Nets, and the Sixers. Who would it hurt the most to lose to in the playoffs?
I don't know. All of them.
All of them. Okay. You don't like have a particular, like, please just not them.
Yeah, I mean, no. No. I would be most focused on the Heat, but
yeah.
Yeah. No. No, please.
I would point out to you right now that if the playoffs were today, your New York Knicks would be tied with the Miami Heat for the last play-in spot, and we could very well, depending on how things turned out, have a Celtic-Knick first-round playoff series, which would just be, I'm sure, awesome for me.
That would be fun. We would have to like live tweet every game together. Live.
We would. We definitely would. Anything else in the world of sports that is currently troubling you, delighting you, catching your interest in some way?
Let me ask you this question. The Jets fans in your life, how much do they hate Zach Wilson on
Wow. That was not good. Just for those who may be wondering what we're talking about, Zach Wilson, who was drafted second a couple years ago to become the Jets' new quarterback, about 2 years after they had drafted Sam Darnold third to be the new quarterback. Zach Wilson, that kid has an arm, man. Like, it's weird because he's little. That dude has an arm. But the Jets and Wilson in particular have struggled with the Patriots forever. And after the last time they lost to the Patriots, someone asked Wilson about, like, whether there was a jinx or a problem or something with the Pats. And all you have to do is give the safe answer, which is, you know, Belichick's a great coach and their defense is always tough. But Zach Wilson, like, refuses to ever acknowledge that anything is going wrong, which ends up being very funny because he really is like the character in the movie who, like, the kitchen door swings open and as they're saying everything's fine and you just see flames, like, behind them and then the door closes. So Zach Wilson, after the Jets played the Patriots again, the Jets lost 10-3 on a ridiculous punt at the very end of the game. But the point is the offense only had 3 points. A reporter asked Wilson if he felt that the offense had let the defense down. The Jet defense has been spectacular this season. And Zach Wilson said no. In fact, he said no twice, which is not the answer to give. So Zach Wilson almost immediately was stripped of his job. And I would say that this, for a fan base that has seen an unfair amount of problems and drama with the quarterback position, it's usually on the field stuff. There was almost a relief to me at Zach Wilson being so myopic, because anything that will get him out of the job sooner than later, I'm happy with. Yeah, I can't believe that he said that. And I'll tell you that I don't know any Jet fans who were remotely buying, as good as the team has been, Zach Wilson being sat for Mike White at least has raised some Jet fans' eyebrows as in terms of, oh, let me see where this team goes. Nobody was buying this with Zach Wilson. It was the defense, and you're kind of winning in spite of the QB.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, the rest of the team is very talented, right? So
they finally have a pass rush, which they haven't had in forever. Quinnen Williams is a great defensive player. C.J. Mosley is an incredible linebacker. Sauce Gardner has immediately become like a blanket cornerback. He's putting up early numbers similar to Darrell Revis and some of the other great cover players that you've seen in recent times. But and they lost, sadly for them, they lost Breece Hall, who was a terrific rookie all-purpose running back very early in the season, could run, could catch. So more things fell on the quarterback. And I don't think Zach Wilson needs to be written off completely, but there has been a repeated, for all the time he's been in New York and the fact that the Jets seem to be turning the corner, he is most well known for, probably in order, his mother, the rumor that he like slept with a school teacher, and now this.
Yep.
That's what Zach Wilson is best known for. So
not a good,
we'll see.
Yeah.
No, it's not what anybody wants. But I think the Jets are like 7-4, and that's fine. That's any year the Jets are 7-4, you'll take it. I believe that is it for this episode of the Jackman Sports Show. I want to thank Jonah, as always, for being here with us. I want to thank you, the listener, for being here with us, and remind you that you can subscribe to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/Jackman Sports Show. We just lost one donor, so if you're looking for a spot to make a difference in life, subscribe today. You can follow us on Twitter, @JackmanSports. You can email us thoughts or questions about anything at all, to JackmanSports@gmail.com. That is it for this week's episode. Jonah Birch, good to see you. Happy early December to you, and we will talk again soon, everybody.